metal. One had a figure 225 written on it. It wasn't in Arabic numerals, it was in Roman numerals. And when I picked up what appeared to be, I suppose, maybe a cockpit window of some kind, the glass fell out of the rubber frame onto the road. Now, there's various versions of what it might be. Maybe it was an empty bomb which was containing propaganda sheets saying leave the area, which the Israelis dropped in the past. I thought that one piece of metal I saw looked very much like a rotor blade. So my guess at the moment is it might be a helicopter, but it could have been a pilotless drone. But certainly, as you can see from the picture, something came out of the sky. It scattered over a wide area and started a huge number of fires. Part of it fell on top of a truck, part on top of a car, killing the driver, who was almost decapitated. His body was lying in the car. It was a pretty terrible scene. But I got out after 2 minutes. The soldiers there told me, by chance I knew the officer, and he told me he simply didn't know at the moment what it was. He thought it was part of a cluster bomb on the road, which we went and had a look at. But then the army too were keen to get out of the area in case the Israelis returned and bombed the scene. And I left at suitable disk speed, I can tell you.
As you say, the Israelis are denying that they've lost one of their aircraft. Is there anything in Beirut which has the capability of shooting down, or anyone would have the capability of shooting down an Israeli jet?
Well, this is the question, you see. I've been asking the same in my paper, The Independent. The Hezbollah clearly were able to shoot at that warship with a teleguided missile on Friday and hit it amidships and killed four sailors. It was almost 2 miles out of sea. So if you can hit a warship at 2 miles, you can probably hit an F-16 at 1 mile. If, in fact, the Israeli Air Force is vulnerable to teleguided missiles, then this changes totally the balance of military capability in the skies over Lebanon. But obviously, at the moment, we don't know what it is. As I recorded in the view, just said, the Israelis said they haven't lost a plane. I think they said they haven't lost a jet, but we don't know if it was a helicopter or not. But certainly something came out of the sky, and it's widely assumed that if the Hezbollah can hit a modern naval vessel out at sea at that range so perfectly, militarily speaking, dead midships, then they can bring down an aeroplane. At the moment, when Israeli aircraft fly over Beirut, you see them drop phosphorus. And this is to mislead heat-seeking missiles, which the Palestinians used to use, say, back in 1982. But this wouldn't have been a heat-seeking missile. This would have been a teleguided missile, not even war-guided. That would have been a much higher technology. And we know that, I know as a fact from Beirut, that the missile that hit the Israeli ship was made in Iran. It was probably a Badger 2.
Yeah, that would be extremely worrying, because the types of missiles that have been used by Hezbollah appear to be much more sophisticated than anyone expected. And they're reaching further into Israel, and this partly explains the power with which Israel is responding.
Well, it also explains the cruelty of Israel's response to the original capture of the two soldiers and the killing of three of its soldiers. Partly accounts for the firing of the missiles into Israel by Hezbollah. It depends where you start the story. Up until now, you see, up until this point, whenever Israel has bombarded Lebanon, they have left the slaughter of innocents behind them. I mean, we're already standing at 143 or possibly more Lebanese dead now. And Israel, apart from a few Katyusha, very low-range Katyusha rockets over the border, was comparatively safe. This is no longer the case. The whole balance of power in this region is changing, because now the Israelis find that they are dying in quite large numbers as well. Obviously, every death, whether it be Israeli or Palestinian or whether it be Lebanese, is tragedy. But what is clearly the case is that in the past, when the Israelis could bomb Lebanon with impunity, those days have gone.
Now, you were almost used the words of the Israeli spokesman Mark Ringer there when you said every civilian death is a tragedy. That's exactly what he said, but he's also saying that Israel has been very surgical in the strikes into Lebanon. Is that your experience from what you've seen on the ground?
Well, he's either not being told the truth or he's lying. On the ground, I can tell you that the slaughter of innocents continues, and the Israelis are well aware they're killing many civilians. They can see from their photo reconnaissance what they're doing. For example, on Saturday, the Israelis actually themselves ordered 20 villagers to leave their homes close to the scene of the soldiers' capture. On Wednesday, they left their homes in a convoy of vehicles and were immediately bombed by an Israeli American-made F-16 aircraft and were incinerated, all 20, buried alive in their cars. The civil defense headquarters in Tyre, which is known to be a civil defense headquarters, 20 more civilians died. In a house in Dwyer, in Nabatea, 8 children were killed and two more were killed, but they were actually annihilated. They simply evaporated in the bomb explosion. One baby lost its head. Terrible, terrible scenes. These pictures are widely been shown on the news in this region. They're shown, the Israelis see them themselves, they know exactly what they're doing. It is clearly a collective punishment of people as well as damage to the infrastructure.
It is hard to work out who actually are being targeted. You've talked about those families in Dwyer. You also mentioned, I think, they may have been families of Shia clerics. So these people the Israelis have targeted in their houses specifically because they are connected to Hezbollah?
Look, I think you have to understand that everyone in those villages has a connection to Hezbollah because Hezbollah supplies the water, they supply the power lines. The imams are not going to preach against the Hezbollah in local mosques. There are some people who are loyal to the rival Amal movement, but not many. It's like saying, well, you know, if you go to Sydney, is there anyone there who's unconnected with national insurance from the Australian government? I mean, everyone will have a connection of some kind. But is that a reason to go around bombing people's homes? How do you explain the convoy of cars from the village who were ordered to leave their homes? How do you explain the attack on the lighthouse outside my house? Is this a terrorist target? How do you explain the attack on gas stations, on the port of Beirut, killing 2 people this morning? The Beirut port is not the centre of terror. The attacks on the airport, which the Israelis said was a central hub for the transfer of Hezbollah weapons. This is a lie. The Beirut airport is a highly efficient, very secure and safe airport on the level of any European airport. Indeed, American diplomats have used it, UN diplomats use it, I use it twice a week usually. Damascus airport is certainly a central hub for the transfer of weapons. But the Israelis don't want to touch Damascus, and I can see why, because they have much longer range missiles than the Hezbollah.
I'll come to that in a moment, but first of all, we're just hearing tonight, very recently, and I think we are getting pictures coming in of this as well, of another attack on the port city of Haifa, this time hitting a residential building. We're not sure what the casualties are.
Right, I've seen the pictures here in Beirut, yeah.
So the Israelis are also taking terrible civilian casualties. The question is, how can this be stopped?
Yeah, go.
How can this be stopped?
Well, number one, look, all civilian casualties. Yeah, I know. First of all, I think the exchange rate for death in this fearful war is about 1 Israeli dead to 6 Lebanese dead, and it needs to be remembered. Yes, I've seen the pictures you're talking about. They've already reached Beirut, and I think there are casualties in Haifa as well. A great tragedy for those people who've died, there's no doubt about it. Look, how do you stop it? First of all, it would be nice to switch off some of the rhetoric. When we hear Ehud Olmert say, for example, the Prime Minister of Israel, we will not release any prisoners because we've lost 2 soldiers captured. This is rubbish. Every time the Israelis are ordered by some various guerrilla group to surrender prisoners, they refuse to do so, and then they do. In 2004, they said they would not release any prisoners and released 1,050 for 1 Israeli spy and the bodies of 3 dead soldiers. In 1985, they released 495 prisoners. And I'm sure they'll end up, releasing some more prisoners in return for their 2 captured soldiers in Lebanon. What we need is UN mediation, and what I think is going to have to happen, and this is partly what this is all about, is that someone is going to have to go to Syria, to Damascus, and say, please, President Bashar al-Assad, will you use your influence to stop the shooting into Israel and to release the soldiers? This is an attempt overall by Hezbollah's main supporter, which is Syria, the arms come from Iran, of course, to say, we're back on the Middle East stage again, you've got to come to Damascus if you want to solve problems. You see, the Americans believed, though I don't really care much about it now, that they got a democracy going in Lebanon last year. They had Bashar al-Assad, the president of Syria, on the run because of the inquiry into the murder of ex-Prime Minister Rafik Hariri on February 14th last year. The Syrians were forced in some humiliation to retreat from Lebanon under the terms of UN Security Council Resolution 1559, which also calls for the disarming of the Hezbollah, by the way, but that's another story. And I think that what this is intended to do, it is cruel and terrible, is to get international diplomacy back in Damascus to acknowledge Syria's leading role in the region, and that it is not a centre of the axis of evil, but a major Arab nation. That, I think, is what this is all about.
If you were to look at this, though, from the Israeli perspective, as you say, the Security Council Resolution 1559 called for the disarming of Hezbollah. In fact, the opposite has happened. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of missiles, increasingly sophisticated missiles now in southern Lebanon, aren't the Israelis within their rights to go in and disarm Hezbollah, which threatens them if nobody else will do it?
Well, it sounds good, but they can't do it. You see, the problem is that it happens with all armies. I've seen it with the British in Northern Ireland, with the Americans in Iraq. The generals have these very wide sweeping ideas. We have to do this, we have to disarm this, we have... But the Hezbollah is one of the most efficient, hardened, ruthless guerrilla armies in the world. And to do what you're suggesting, what the Israelis claim they can do, you'll need to send in about 100,000 troops into Lebanon, and they will be eaten up, just as they were in 1982, with massive casualties. And the Israelis don't want that. They're not going to be able to disarm the Hezbollah. You know, back in 1996, the Israelis said, we demand and insist upon and will not stop firing into Lebanon until the Hezbollah is disarmed. And then they had a ceasefire, and Hezbollah was not disarmed, of course, and it's not going to be disarmed now. This is rhetoric for the benefit of folk like you and me to print in our newspapers and say on Australian television, but it's not going to happen.
Okay, what about the other options been floated today by Britain's Tony Blair and Tony Abbott?
I notice you don't want to disarm the Israeli army either, do you?
It's not a question of me disarming anyone, obviously, but let me ask you about that point.
No, I'm just saying you must have both sides of the border. An awful lot of Lebanese would like the Israeli aircraft taken away from the Israelis. They're not going to have it, but you see there is a two sides to it. I mean, this country has been invaded twice by Israel, remember, on a full-scale military invasion. I've had the doubtful privilege of being present in both occasions. But sorry, I interrupted your question, forgive me.
Yes, my question was about the other option, which is an intermediary, a UN force, which has been floated, a stabilisation force, as it's called, floated. We know there are UN troops, obviously, in southern Lebanon, or have been, floated by Tony Blair and Kofi Annan. Obviously, they're talking about a far bigger force that is already there. Could it work? Would anyone be prepared to commit to it? NATO, for example.
Ho, ho, ho. Well, the British would have to go there. Tony Blair's really suggesting it. I don't know if Tony Blair realises that there's still already UN troops there. There are several thousand UN soldiers on the border, including a very efficient Indian battalion of the Indian Army, with blue berets on. But I thought you could add to it or have an extra force under NATO. NATO's not doing very well in Afghanistan at the moment. In fact, the British almost got overrun by the Taliban in a village in Helmand province the other day, and no one is going to claim that the hell disaster of Iraq is a success for the American military. So foreign troops in Muslim lands don't work very well, do they? I suppose we could see Turkish troops brought in, they're Muslims. It's clear that with the arrival of the French Prime Minister in Beirut today, Monsieur de Villepin, who obviously is trying to build up his popular ratings in Paris, in France, he may well suggest a French battalion. There are actually a company of French troops in the UN border force at the moment. And with France's traditional links with Lebanon, it held the French mandate here from 1919 until 1946, it may well be that with their traditional links, especially with the Christian community, the French are thinking in terms of putting French troops in southern Lebanon. But the French actually had a battalion there in UNIFIL and had to be withdrawn because they kept having firefights with Shia Muslim militias. So that doesn't sound very likely. I think at the end of the day, any kind of intervention force would have to have the permission of Syria and of the Hezbollah, and I don't think you could have a Western force. I think the days of Christian armies trying to control Muslim states are probably over.
Robert Pearce, we will have to leave you there. We'll hopefully be able to come back to you as this unfolds. We thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us tonight.